Good morning. My name is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the September 9th, 2020 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Commissioners Credit Committee. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for all reviews on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for the Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, and specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during this meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask that the commissioners and participating staff please mute your phone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
This is Carol Ventura. Commissioner Watts, Eric Shorter is now on the call. Nicole Clement, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Good morning, everyone. This is Nicole Clement. Pursuant to Executive Order 20-46, extended by Executive Order 20-63, and as may be further amended or extended, this meeting is being held via teleconference. Members of the public can visit the Rhode Island Housing website to view the agenda and information on the actions being taken. In the event this teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect and audio is restored. I would now like to provide some additional guidance to our committee members and staff as they participate in this meeting. Committee Chairman Kevin Orth will preside. Please remember to state your name prior to speaking, and please remember to mute your telephone line when you are not speaking, and we appreciate your cooperation. And now I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Orth to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Orth. I'm pleased to see that we've got a nice long agenda here for us today. And again, thank you for your participation. The meeting's now called to order, and I'd like to ask Carol to take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner Orth. I will now conduct a roll call of members of the Credit Committee, Board of Commissioners in attendance, and staff of Rhode Island Housing. Chairman Nicholas Ratzinas.
Here.
Commissioner Kevin Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Elizabeth Tanner.
Here.
Commissioner Maria Barry.
Here.
Staff of Rhode Island Housing. James Comer.
Here.
Lisa Primiano.
Here.
Cara LaChapelle.
Here.
Eric Shorter.
Here.
Christine Hunsinger.
Here.
Nicole Clement.
Here.
Eric Alexander. Ann Berman.
Here.
Milton Baxter.
Here.
Jeff Swanson.
Here.
Leslie McKnight.
Here.
Peter Pagonis.
Here.
Carl Rotella.
Here.
Lauren Farley.
Here.
Commissioner Orth, the roll call is complete. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Carol. I would now like to introduce Committee Action 1, which is the approval of Credit Committee meeting minutes held on August 5th, 2020. I'd like to request a motion to approve and just want to remind all the commissioners to please state your name prior to speaking.
Maria Barry, so moved. Liz Tanner, second.
Great. Thank you both. Any discussion on the meeting minutes? No. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote on the motion?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on August 5th, 2020, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Ratzinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. I'd now like to introduce committee action item number 2, which is the recommendation for firm approval of financing for Maple Gardens 2, a 90-unit elderly affordable housing development located in North Providence. And I'd like to now introduce Milton Baxter from the Development Division, who will present this action item.
Good morning, Chairman North and Commissioners. This is Milton Baxter. Before you this morning is a request for recommendation of approval of a taxable loan in the amount of $10,360,000 for Maple Gardens 2. Maple Gardens 2 is a 90-unit affordable elderly housing development located in North Providence. It was built in 1979 and fully renovated in 2000. Frillin Corporation is the sponsor. The property is subsidized by a Section 8 HAP contract, which is valid through May of 2040. It was recently renewed in June of this year in anticipation of this transaction. The sponsor is going to be using the proceeds to pay off the existing Rhode Island housing mortgages, undertake accessibility repairs, elevator, energy efficiency, and life safety upgrades. The improvements are about $500,000. There will also be an equity takeout as part of this transaction. During the underwriting of this transaction, we underwrote it with a 4% vacancy rate, which is below our standard of 5%. We feel it's warranted to use the 4% vacancy rate in this instance. The property has had below 1% vacancy in the last 3 years. Also of note is the operating reserve that's equal to 3 months each of debt service and operating expenses, less the initial deposit to the replacement reserves. You may have noted that the operating reserve is about $16,000 in this case, which is lower than we might used to be seeing in various transactions. However, this reserve does meet the requirements of this program, and the operating reserve has been reviewed by asset management and approved by them. The property has strong financial operations, and this is a very strong operator, and we are confident that the operating reserve is sufficient. There's also a replacement reserve of $315,000, which equals $3,500 per unit, and this exceeds the program requirements of $2,000 per unit. CNA was done to make sure that the replacement reserve would be adequate to meet any capital needs of the property over the next 15 years. Additionally, we are going to require the borrower to perform a new CNA every 5 years of the loan in order to make sure that the replacement reserve is adequately capitalized. We are seeking recommendation of firm approval for the first mortgage in the amount of $10,360,000. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Milton. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action item number 2, which is the firm approval of financing for Maple Gardens 2.
Maria Berry, so moved.
Liz Tanner, second.
Great. Thank you both. Any discussion or questions about this item?
This is Nick. I do, Kevin. One of the issues I've brought up many times is the use of the takeout proceeds. In this case, the staff has listed the criteria, including financially beneficial rather than housing. Could I have an elaboration of how that's quantified, financially beneficial?
Hi, Nick. This is Ann Berman. I can help with that, and Kara as well. So when a existing property is considered for a refinance, it needs to meet certain criteria under the program. In this case, I believe this loan was 12 or 13 years into its most recent financing. Finance looks at the proposal, looks at the new loan, looks at the earnings that the corporation is making on the existing loan, and the earnings that the corporation would make on a new loan, both interest as well as additional origination fees, and does a comparison of of those various metrics. If it looks like the corporation will make as much as it does or is making under its current financing or more, then it is considered quote unquote advantageous for the corporation to proceed with the loan. Kara, I don't know if you or Bernie wants to elaborate on that.
This is Kara. Ann explained it correctly. We for every refinance that we do, we are comparing the existing revenue Rhode Island Housing is receiving to what the new deal will provide to Rhode Island Housing, and also comparing that to the other benefits of extending the affordability. But we ensure that Rhode Island Housing is not put in a detrimental place by refinancing the loan.
I understand that conceptually, though I'd be curious to see an actual write-up of the numbers on it. But I continue to wonder whether enabling an equity takeout of $6 million is the appropriate way to proceed, and whether we might be financially beneficial, but could it be more financially beneficial? What would the owner do if it were?
Well, I think one of the challenges. Go ahead, Eric.
I was on mute. But one of the challenges is that the product that we're competing against is a HUD product, and so what we did is try to create a product that we can compete with HUD and prevent runoff of our portfolio. And so HUD is less restrictive than this. They're able to take out more money and capitalize less reserves and things like that. So this was something to try to give us to keep the runoff from our portfolio. And so we structured it this way.
So there was no absolute numbers we use in determining financially beneficial?
This is Kara. There are. I mean, that's exactly what we're looking at, what our future potential income is on the existing loan. So we have those numbers versus the future income on the new loan. Right. We can provide you with that kind of information so you can get an idea for how we are analyzing these.
Nick, this is Carol. One other thing I would add, it is financially beneficial to the agency. We don't want runoff of the portfolio. But I think being the owner or the lender on these transactions really benefits the residents as well. We're involved on a day-to-day basis with these developments. Our asset management division is on top of it, and we really focus on the benefits of these developments to the residents. So I think there's additional benefits, not necessarily to us, but the people who live there, in terms of our providing this financing. And I know that you have concerns around the equity takeout, but these owners would be entitled to it if they went to other lenders. And right. I think we add value being the lender in these larger deals.
Good point. I know I have been a broken record on this, and I apologize to keep bringing it up, but I'm still looking at the raw numbers of the $6 million equity takeout, which seems substantial.
Yes. But, well, as Kara said, Nick, we will provide you with that analysis that we conduct so that you can have a handle on how the finance and development staff look at these transactions.
That would be helpful. Thank you, Carol.
This is
another item of note.
I would just like to follow up on that item with you, Nick. I just request that staff look a little closer at that HUD 223F program, because on its face it is not quite as generous in the equity takeout provisions. But I think the point is very valid that it is our main competitor loan program. And when we have a higher interest rate and maybe higher transaction costs, that we need to look to where we can be advantageous to a borrower, particularly one that's been in our portfolio for some time, and it's a property that we would definitely like to have in our loan portfolio. I agree with that. I think that we just need to make sure that we're very aware of what our competitors' characteristics are, and make sure that we're modeling ourselves appropriately.
Okay, thank you.
I think it's also, this is Milton Baxter, I think it's also important to note that Rhode Island Housing will be retaining 20% of the equity holdback until construction completion. So we will have 100% of the construction improvement costs will be held, as well as 20% of the equity takeout. And that gives us the leverage to make sure that the construction completion is done, and that it is in accordance with the plans and specifications and the Rhode Island Housing requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Liz or Maria, any comments or questions?
No comments.
None for me.
Great. Like to then ask Nicole to conduct roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Maple Gardens 2 to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. Now I'd like to jump to committee action item number 3, which is the recommendation for firm approval of financing for Geneva Plaza, which is a similar transaction to the one that we just covered. And I'd again like to introduce Milton Baxter to present this board action.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Milton Baxter. As you mentioned, this is a twin transaction to the one that was just reviewed and approved or recommended for approval. This is for Geneva Plaza, which is located in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. This is a 150-unit elderly housing development, which was built in 1983 and renovated in 2002. Berlin Corporation is, again, the sponsor in this project. The project is subsidized by a Section 8 HAP contract, which is valid through at the end of April 2033. The sponsor in this transaction will pay off existing round housing mortgages, undertake accessibility repairs, energy efficiency upgrades, and life safety upgrades. The improvements total about $400,000. And likewise, there will be an equity takeout in this transaction as well. In terms of underwriting considerations, similarly to the previous action, we used a 4% vacancy rate. And as we have indicated in the write-up, the historical vacancy ranged from 0.67 to 1.2 since 2017. And again, an OPEX reserve equal to 3 months of each of debt service and operating expenses less the initial deposit to the placement reserve is being set up. And we're also setting up a replacement reserve in the amount of $390,000, which is equal to $2,600 per unit, which again exceeds our requirement of $2,000 per unit. We're seeking recommendation of firm approval to the first mortgage of an amount up to $14,970,000. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Milton. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action item number 3, which is firm approval of financing for Geneva Plaza, located in Pawtucket.
Maria Barry, so moved.
Liz Tanner, second.
Great, thank you both. Now I'd like to open it up for any questions or comments about this item.
Ditto.
I'll jump in with a couple of comments. This is a great location, and I think for this type of property, and I'm glad to see it to be maintained in our portfolio. On the The underwriting, I'd just like to make a small note. I see that you're averaging income of 2% a year, which I think is generally fine. But on a property like this with such a high loan amount, the annual OCAF gets essentially decreased by the amount of debt service, but the percentage of debt service, so which is about 40% of the income. So that 2% OCAF really drops down to about a 1.3% rent increase. So I think it's fine because you got extra. I think your actual vacancy is going to be less than the 4% that you assumed. But particularly with where we're doing a 17-year bullet loan as opposed to fully amortized, I think that I just ask that you be aware of that and take a look at it on this and other transactions. And then one other comment, and I'll turn it over to my fellow commissioners, is the I saw that on the financing cost, it looks like there was the origination fee was approximately 1.3%. I didn't know is that supposed to be 1.5%?
The origination fee is a function of I believe it's 2% for the first $500,000, and then 1% for anything over that.
Okay, I see.
There's one correction.
It's 2% of the first $5 million, and then 1% on any amount north of $5 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the cost of issuance. I know this is not a tax exempt transaction, but so what is that cost of issuance supposed to cover?
Yeah, the cost of issuance covers all of Rhode Island housing costs associated with issuing the bonds, which includes bond counsel, financing, issuer fees, underwriting spread, financial advisory fees, and a number of other transactions that Rhode Island Housing incurs in connection with the issuance of the bonds.
Okay, so this would be... This is similar, therefore, to a tax-exempt transaction, you're saying?
In terms of how we the bonds are issued and the issuer fees that we collect, yes.
Okay, great. I don't have any other questions, Liz or Maria?
No questions for me.
No? Okay, great. Thank you. I had the discussion. I guess it's now on to Nicole, then, please, to conduct a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Geneva Plaza to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Retzinas?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
Commissioner Barry?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Now I'd like to move on to item number 4, which is the recommendation for preliminary approval of financing for Sutton Place, located in East Providence. And I'd like to introduce Jeff Swanson, Development Officer, who will present this board action.
Good morning, everyone. As Commissioner Orth said, this is Jeff Swanson, Development Officer with Rhode Island Housing. This action for Sutton Place is in response to an application that was submitted by Olneyville Housing Corporation, who is currently operating as One Neighborhood Builders. Sutton Place is an existing 36-unit market-rate complex. Units are a mix of small studio and one bedrooms. This area is projected to see some significant rent pressure in the coming months and years. The developer thinks the most cost-effective way to create affordable housing in this community is the acquisition of existing units. This morning, we are requesting preliminary approval of a first mortgage of $1,315,000. It should be noted the developer has also applied for a preservation loan, a home loan, and a housing trust fund loan. These requests will be handled separately, either later in this meeting or at a later date. The acquisition price for the project is $3,420,000 or $95,000 a unit, One Neighborhood Builders has an option, a purchase option at that price. Immediately after closing, the developer anticipates completing some common area and unit improvements in excess of $1.1 million or over $30,000 per unit. Understandably, the developer does not want to spend thousands of dollars on due diligence reports until they have completed, until they have a complete capital stack in place. As a result, Rhode Island Housing staff has completed initial underwriting, but various unanswered questions remain. Between preliminary and firm approval, we look forward to reviewing an appraisal for the project to confirm both the purchase price and underwriting rents, a capital needs assessment, phase one environmental reports, and other various information. At this time, we are requesting the committee's recommendation for preliminary approval of the permanent loan of $1,315,000.
Great. Thank you very much, Jeff, for that presentation. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action number item number four, which is the preliminary approval of financing.
Financing.
Maria Berry, so moved. Liz Tanner, second.
Great. Thank you both. Now I'd like to open it up for any discussion or questions about this item.
Hi, Devin. It's Maria. I have a quick question, actually, that I think actually transcends all of the rehabs. Could the team talk about the plans for ensuring, like, safety of residents and what, if anything, Rhode Island Housing requires when a rehab's taking place during COVID?
Sure. I think that's a great question. I posed this some time ago to Eric, and actually I think a very good plan in place. Eric, would you like to go over that, please?
Hi. Thanks, Jeff. Yes, we our design and construction division has put together an internal COVID plan to get into occupied units. We've reviewed that with the with the builders associations to review and make sure that it's copacetic with the industry standards. We feel very confident in our ability to go into units now and make sure that the residents are safe. We're currently exploring some additional technology that allows them to clean the units and kill germs effectively, that allows folks to return to their units in an expedited manner. Currently, we were looking at really kind of relocation. So we're currently looking at this stuff on a consistent basis. So we're really excited about the opportunities to be able to get into these units and the plan that we have. That's, again, like I mentioned, it's with industry standards at this particular time. And I can provide to the whole credit committee this plan. I shared it with Commissioner Orff, but I can share it with the entire committee so you can see this plan in detail.
Okay, and so with the plan, do residents return to their unit that day after work's been done, or are they moved out for the construction period?
So the current plan that we have, folks, with they leave for the day. We clean the units, and it's really about cleaning before and cleaning after, and then they return back to the unit.
Okay, and there's been no issues so far that we're aware of.
In the projects we have, I think the first project was in North Providence. We haven't had any issues to date.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And this is Jeff Swanson. If I might add to the construction specialist's credit, these plans are not something that's done and approved prior to the transaction closing. It is something that is a standard item for every construction meeting agenda, and it's discussed every every week or at the biweekly meetings. It's monitored. It's enforced. It's not just an empty plan.
Okay, thank you. I think it's really important that happens and it's monitored too to ensure how it's going, you know, during this time. So thank you.
Right. Commissioner Berry, I failed to mention that, you know, we have affidavits that the owner as well as the contractor has signed indicating they're going to follow these protocols.
Okay, thank you.
This is Commissioner Orth. I'll jump in with a couple of comments and questions. I think that this is interesting, this development, in the sense that it's an acquisition renovation project that is not utilizing the 4% or the 9% credits for that matter. And in a way, it's something of a new paradigm here. So I'm glad to see the thought that went into that and to try to push that and maybe fashion this into a viable program. I think that maintaining a stock of this NOAA units, as they're called, the naturally occurring affordable housing, is a good idea and can be a less expensive approach to preserving and maintaining an affordable stock of housing. Having said that, I think that it would be great to maybe set some clear priorities for a program of this type. And Jeff, I heard that you say that the belief is that this is a rapidly gentrifying area. Obviously, I think a market study, you know, we would need to confirm that. The purchase price looks to me to be quite high. It's about a three cap on the kind of the post-rehab NOI. I know you'll get an appraisal on that, but again, that looks rather high. And then the rents as well. I would think that through a program like this, we would not want to be significantly increasing rents or displacing, you know, existing residents as a result of the rehab or, you know, increased rents. Certainly, I guess some increase is justified by the level of renovation, but I don't think we would want to have, you know, a dumping out of the property as a result of the program when we're trying to preserve housing. So those are my general comments. I know this is just the preliminary financing, but those are my preliminary comments.
Commissioner Orff, this is Eric. I just want to address your first question, and I'll let Jeff deal with some of sort of the underwriting piece. In terms of a overarching program for NOAA, we have a draft program that we're discussing at the senior team level. Once we get through that process, obviously we'll bring it to the credit committee. So we've been thinking about this for some time. We're excited about the opportunities. Quite frankly, we have probably three or four transactions that are in the queue now that are similar to this. And so we recognize the need to create some parameters for a program. So in the coming months, we'll have a program, hopefully, if we can get through the senior committee to present to the credit committee.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Liz or Nick, any questions or comments?
I don't have any additional comments, but I do share the concern about the acquisition cost.
And just so you know, the team, and as many of you know, Jeff is an appraiser. We are concerned about the acquisition costs as well, and we've been kicking this around sometimes. So we're just waiting for, obviously, this is conditioned upon the appraisal. We'll wait to get that, and we'll, you know, come back to the committee.
Thank you.
And this is Jeff, if I might. With the this project was selected carefully. With regards to your comment and concern about displacing tenants, they've actually already gone through, and to the extent that the seller is able and willing to make information available, they've pre-qualified, I believe, approximately 30 of the 36 units to confirm that their income levels are consistent with the underwriting brackets, and that's part of why they've done a graduated program. All units will become affordable, but they'll range from 30% up to 80% AMI with various steps in between. So we share your concerns as a corporation, and on this project specifically, we do not expect to displace tenants.
Great, thank you. That's good to hear. Hearing no other comments or questions, I'd like to ask Nicole to conduct roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending preliminary approval of financing for Sutton Place to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rosinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. Now I'd like to move to committee action number 5, which is the recommendation for approval of transfer of physical assets for Stevens Hall Apartments. And I'd like to introduce Ann Berman, the Assistant Director of Development, who will present this item.
Good morning. This is Ann Berman. This request is for approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Stevens Hall Apartments, which is an affordable housing development with 32 family units located on Elmwood Avenue in Providence. Stevens Hall was originally developed in 2000 by West Elmwood Housing Development Corporation, and the initial 15-year compliance period expired in 2015. The owner of the development is called Stevens Hall Development Associates Limited Partnership. The current general partner is SH Development Corporation, which is an affiliate of West Elmwood Housing Development Corporation, and they hold a 0.01% interest in the partnership. There are two limited partners, which are both affiliates of Enterprise Community Partners, which is a national syndicator, and collectively they own 99.9% of Stevens Hall. West Elmwood is seeking the transfer of the two limited partnership interests to another West Elmwood affiliated entity called Hope Renewed Realty Corporation. The staff of the asset management team and the development division jointly reviewed this request under the TPA guide regulations and determined that the proposed transfer complies with the regulatory requirements. Stevens Hall received an 89 out of 100 under Rhode Island Housing's risk rating protocol. The debt service is quite healthy at 2.116 as of the end of December 2019. It was a little bit lower, 1.6 in 2018, but high 2.5 in 2017. And that variance is consistent, you know, depending on snowfall and some of, you know, uncontrollable operations costs. The operating and replacement reserves are adequately funded. Annual operating expenses are considered average and acceptable for a property that is, you know, 20 years into its initial mortgage. West Elmwood is likely, well, they are working on a refinance and a rehabilitation of Stevens Hall, which they hope to consummate in the next 12 to 18 months. We've seen some initial numbers. They have a little bit of work to do to get to a complete capital stack. Staff recommends approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Stevens Hall to Hope Renewed Realty Corporation. Happy to answer any questions.
Oops, sorry about that. I've got to remember to unmute myself. Thank you, Ann. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action number 5, which is the approval of TPA for Stevens Hall Apartments.
Liz Tanner, so moved.
Nick Rotino, second.
Great. Thank you both. Any comments or questions about this item? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Nicole to conduct roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the transfer of physical assets for Stevens Hall Apartment to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
I'm actually going to recuse myself because I'm on the Board of Enterprise.
The vote is 3 ayes, 0 nays, and 1 recusal. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. I'd now like to introduce committee action item number 6, which is the recommendation for approval of transfer of physical assets for Bellevue Apartments, quite similar to what we just heard about. And Anne,
hi, good morning.
You're going to introduce this again. Thank you.
Yes. Good morning. This is Anne Berman again. As Commissioner Orth said, this is very similar to the previous transaction. This request is for the approval of the limited partnership interest in Bellevue Apartments, which is a 19-unit scattered site series of properties located in the west end of Providence. Bellevue Apartments was originally developed in 1997. The initial compliance period expired in 2012. The current general partner is Hollis Development Corporation, which is an affiliate of West Elmwood, and they hold a 1% interest in the partnership. There is one limited partner in this transaction, which is also an affiliate of Enterprise Community Partners, and they own 99% of Bellevue Apartments. Like the previous action, West Elmwood is seeking the transfer of the LP interest from Enterprise to a West Elmwood affiliated entity known as Hope Renewed Realty Corporation. The staff of both asset management and development jointly reviewed this under our TPA regulations and determined that the transfer does comply with our regulatory requirements. The risk rating score on Bellevue is considered average. It's a little bit lower than on Stevens Hall, but it's also an older development and scattered sites, which is more challenging to own and manage. The debt service was 2.13 at the end of 18, but actually fell to 0.13 at the end of 2019 due to some turnovers and the need to complete some significant repairs to vacant units, which West Elmwood did using funds, operating funds, as well as some replacement reserves. So actually, as of 6/30/2020, the debt service was back up to 2.5, which is quite healthy. The operating replacement reserves are adequately funded. The operating expenses are considered average for a 23-year-old property. West Elm would like to combine Bellevue with Stevens Hall, so they'd have a deal of almost 40 units in order to refinance and rehabilitate the properties in the next 12 to 18 months. So staff recommends approval of the transfer of the LP interest in Bellevue to Hope Renewed Realty Corporation. Again, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Anne. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of this action item, which is the approval of PPA for Bellevue Apartments.
So moved.
Ms. Tanner, second.
Great, thank you. Any discussion or questions? I'm assuming not. It was similar to the last one. Okay, great. Hearing none, Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the transfer of physical assets for Bellevue Apartments to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
I'm going to recuse myself on this one as well.
Thank you. Committee Chairman Orth, it is 3 ayes, 0 nays, and 1 recusal. The motion passes.
Great. Thanks so much, Nicole. Now I'd like to introduce Item number 7, which is the recommendation for preliminary approval of reservation of Home Investment Partnerships Program funds. And I'd like to introduce Eric Alexander, the Assistant Director of Development, who will present this board action item.
Thank you, Chairman Orth. I'm actually going to take this opportunity to introduce our program coordinator for the Home and Housing Trust Funds, Lauren Farley. She did a masterful job of heading up this round, and she will be presenting proposed board action to the committee members. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. That's very kind. We have right now $9.3 million available for reservation to of home program funds. In March 2020, we received 9 proposals in response to our request for proposals. Those applications were reviewed for thresholds criteria and then scored. Met with senior program staff to recommend 4 of those projects in the amount of $4,565,696. Those funds will be used to build or preserve 86 units. 31 of them will be home units. 4 projects are all from nonprofit developers. First one in Exeter is Pineview Apartments. This project received preliminary approval for 4% credits last month. It's 40 units. 5 1-bedroom, 35 2-bedroom units, 11 will be home-assisted. In Central Falls Housing Authority, School Street Apartments, they partnered with Women's Development Corporation to build 6-unit development. 5 of those units will be home-assisted. In Sutton Street Apartments, this is the project Jeff just spoke about, 36-unit development. 11 of the units will be home-assisted. And final project is NeighborWorks, Blackstone River Valley. This is the frontline child care worker residence. This is the rehabilitation project for 4 efficiency units with a shared kitchen and living area. All 4 units will be home assisted and restricted to 30%, and 2 at 30% and 2 at 50%. The total amount of recommendations is $4.5 million for these units. I don't know if there's any additional questions.
Great. Thank you very much for that presentation. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of this action item, which is the approval of reservation of Home Investment Partnership Program funds.
Maria Berry, so moved.
Liz Tanner, second.
Great. Thank you both. And I'd like to if I may, I'm going to start it off with a couple of questions, more general ones, and then perhaps we can get into each individual project. But I note that we only get a little over $3 million a year. We have over $9 million available. So we're not getting much demand for this funding source. And only 4 of the 9 applicants are being recommended for funding. So maybe could we have a bit of a background on why this seems to be a difficult source to utilize and how we might better utilize it?
Chairman North, this is Eric Alexander, and I'm happy to address that. We're actually seeing an uptick in demand in our standalone rounds. Relative to the last couple of years, qualifying applicants that were received actually is an increase. Part of this is because we are still kind of emerging as a program from the IG and HUD audits of the program. It required significant changes to our program policies and procedures, and our nonprofit developer partners who are the primary utilizers of the funding source are just now becoming familiar with those kind of newly revamped requirements and becoming comfortable with the administrative burden, for lack of a better way to put it, that are associated with the use of the funds. In addition to the standalone rounds, we do make the home and housing trust funds available in conjunction with the 9% rounds, and we're seeing an increase in use of the housing trust fund in particular, but home as well in those projects. So we believe that hear your concern about the apparent lack of uptake on the program, but it's a situation that we see improving. We're as kind of in reaction to that, we're anticipating adding one round a year for home and housing trust funds, at least one round a year for home and housing trust funds on a standalone basis, to afford developers more opportunity to take advantage of the funding sources.
Oh, great. I think that's a good idea to push some more of these funds out the door. I'm going to follow up with one other question, and that is about the NeighborWorks Blackstone River Valley project, which is super interesting. And I see that you know, having before and after school program is can be a critical component for residents of affordable housing, so that they can go to work and know that their children are taken well care of. However, I'm sure you looked into this, but it seems a little unusual. Can tenants be specified like this in the home program? And also just the overall design with four efficiency units and a shared kitchen, is that from a programmatic standpoint, does that meet the requirements?
Happy to address that as well. Would you like to take that, Lauren?
I was going to say, with their application submission, there was their tenant selection plan, and they also submitted their affirmative fair housing marketing plan and reviewed both of those for consistency with affirmative fair housing, because, as you noted, it is an interesting proposal. We did do that
Regarding the efficiency.
Single room occupancy is allowed under the home program. We did review the home program guidelines to make sure that that worked.
Okay, so is this an SRO, or is it sounds more like cooperative housing?
It is an SRO. There are four separate bedrooms with four en suites. From a program standpoint, and apologies, we probably should have clarified that in the RFA. From a program standpoint, in rents between SROs and efficiencies, SROs are allowed under the program.
Okay, great. I'll now give it over to my colleagues here to ask any questions.
This is Nick. I just want to acknowledge the geographic diversity. It was nice to see.
Maria Berry, no comment.
Okay. Here, no other comments or questions. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Thank you, this is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending preliminary approval of the Reservation of Home Investment Partnerships Program funds to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rosinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye, and I do need to drop off after this vote.
Thank you. Commissioner Berry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Nicole. I'd now like to move on to committee action number 8, which is the recommendation for approval of preliminary reservation of housing trust fund program funds. And I believe that, Eric, perhaps you'll present this action item?
Actually, Lauren will be presenting this as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Orth.
Great. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. As part of the same round in March, it was HOME and HTF. We have $4.5 million in preliminary in funds available for reservation. We received 8 proposals requesting $7.4 million. Similar to HOME, we reviewed all the applications for threshold criteria, scored them, and met with senior staff. We're going to be recommending 3 HTF program proposals in the amount of $1.8 million. The 3 projects I just mentioned, but I'll go through them again quickly. Women's Development Corporation, Pine View Apartments. This project will have 3 HTF assisted units in the amount of $515,000. Central Falls, in partnership with Women's Development, we're going to be recommending this will have 1 HTF unit in addition to the 5 home units. That's $171,000. And then the final project is the Sutton Street Apartments, and this one will have 9 HTF assisted units in the amount of $1.1 million. I don't know if there's any additional questions.
Great. Thank you for that presentation, Lauren. I'd like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action item number 8, which is the preliminary reservation of housing trust fund program funds.
Maria Berry, so moved.
Second.
Great, thank you both. I'll start off the discussion. Lauren, I see that out of the 8 applicants, only 3 are being recommended for approval. Could you just generally speak to what the issues were of the other 5 that were not being recommended?
Sure. 2 of them had significant omissions in their application. Notably, they didn't include a pro forma. So they were threshold fails. And there were 2 additional threshold fails, pretty much based on financial feasibility of the projects as presented. And then the 5th project, this is a home issue, not an HTF issue, but there was a choice limiting action. The home program, there are certain things you cannot do before the environmental review is complete, and acquisition is one of them. So one of the properties included in the home application was acquired a few weeks after the application. So we had to disqualify that one as well. So that's what left us with 4 remaining projects. So 4 of them had requested home, and 3 of them had requested HTF.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Any other comments or questions? Nick, Maria?
No.
No, none for me either.
Okay, thank you both. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the Preliminary Reservation Housing Trust Fund Program Funds to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinis.
Aye.
Commissioner Berry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. Now I'd like to move on to item number 9, which is the recommendation for approval of Supportive Housing Acquisition Program Awards. And I'd like to introduce James Comer, the Deputy Executive Director, who will present this item.
Good morning, everybody. This is James Comer. The program we're discussing this morning, Supportive Housing Acquisition Program, arose from a series of conversations with individuals at the state and in the homeless services provision community as an effort to de-densify homeless shelters to reduce the incidence of COVID transmission. This is a direct response to the COVID-19 crisis, the idea being that the living conditions in crowded shelters are quite ripe for the transmission of COVID, and as a result of folks being in that situation, they were in jeopardy of both contracting and spreading the virus. So using the CARES Act dollars at their disposal, the state had offered to present $7 million to capitalize a program to acquire move-in-ready properties in order to move shelter-dependent individuals from that scenario into a better, less dense housing situation in the short term to keep those folks healthy and to also just reduce the incidence of transmission among the homeless community. They enlisted our assistance as kind of technical assistance because we do acquisition of real property on a regular basis and would have the ability to put together an RFP in a quick fashion, which we did in July. We received three responses to that RFP, which was structured not only to identify properties that could be identified quickly and occupied quickly for de-densification of the shelters, but that would ultimately hopefully be developed as permanent supportive housing for this population down the road with other financing. So of the $7 million that we had available, we received applications totaling $2,058,700 from three applicants. Those three applicants were AIDS Care Ocean State, Crossroads Rhode Island, and Marathon Construction, who's working in partnership with House of Hope and Women's Development Corporation. I'll run through briefly the three proposals and what they're requesting before opening it up for any questions. AIDS Care Ocean State is requesting $570,000 to purchase 520 West Avenue in Pawtucket. It's a four-unit multifamily building that is in move-in condition right now. These apartments will be restricted to 30% AMI or less to house homeless individuals immediately. It's in proximity to public transportation, healthcare, and city amenities. And AIDS Care Ocean State does have an option to purchase right now. The funding would be contingent upon a series of due diligence measures that they would need to undertake at their expense and need to be approved by our design and construction and development staff prior to closing. Marathon Construction is proposing to acquire the former Rockville Mill in Hopkinton, Rhode Island, which is a 14-unit property that was developed about 7 years ago using a mixture of Rhode Island housing funding, BHRI funds, and other funds available. Due to issues with the developer and subsequent issues with the property, it became unable to pay its mortgage and is now in receivership. So Marathon Construction has also applied to the receiver for the acquisition of this property using these funds. They're requesting $775,000 of the Supportive Housing Acquisition Program funding, again, to house 14 homeless individuals or families that are currently in shelter, and ultimately develop it as permanent supportive housing. The final application came from Crossroads, Rhode Island, which is seeking $713,700 to acquire the former Greater Providence YMCA. This is property that is adjacent to their current property that they own right now and would be used as a temporary shelter for 30 individuals while they develop it as part of a larger plan to create permanent supportive housing on this site and the site next to it, which is currently a parking lot. It would be a much larger project ultimately, but for the short term, they could certainly operate as 30 units of shelter housing, which would allow them to thin out the population in their other shelters as they that they're operating right now. All of these proposals need a full review of the due diligence. We need to obtain evidence from the municipalities involved that they are cleared for occupancy, that they're free of any municipal liens, and go through a standard process for due diligence prior to acquiring the property. This property would, this money would flow through Rhode Island Housing. It would be funded by either CARES Act dollars or general revenue from the state, which would then be reimbursed by CARES Act dollars, and we would administer these funds and shepherd these acquisitions through closing. All of the closings would need to occur, and the properties would need to be occupied by November 30th in order to qualify for the use of CARES Act funds. So it would be a very tight time frame to get this done. All of the developers have been apprised of this and are prepared to meet this, and our staff is prepared to assist and review as necessary to get these transactions closed. This is a rather unique program given the accelerated time frame, and that is driven by the need to expend the CARES Act dollars in this calendar year. It is possible that a subsequent bill from Congress would extend the time frame for the expenditure of that money, but we don't have any certainty that that's going to happen in a timely fashion, so we need to prepare to close these deals in a time frame in which they can have occupancy by 11:30. So again, the total that we are looking for to be approved today is $2,058,700, which would create 48 beds for temporary use to de-densify shelters and address the spread of COVID-19 amongst the shelter-dependent population. None of these funds would be Rhode Island Housing funds. We would bear no financial obligation. The only financial obligation is borne through the state. We would administer these funds, and staff time would be devoted to that. But any staff time that we would use or have already used in the administration of this program, we can invoice to the state for payment by the CARES Act dollars. Our legal team has been working with the state and have an MOU prepared that is just going through final legal review by the state to codify this relationship. But it's something that we've been able to use similar documents that we've used in the past for similar programs. And likewise, our loan documents would be similar to other programs we've used. This would be structured as a forgivable loan to the developers, provided that they adhere to the program requirements we've already published and that they've already reviewed, and we would just be responsible for ensuring compliance with that. So I would like to ask for the committee's approval for the $2,058,700 to be expended for these three projects.
Great. Thank you so much, James, not only for the presentation, but also for your work and staff's work and the response to quarterbacking this important program through. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of this committee action number 9, which is for the Supportive Housing Acquisition Program Awards.
So moved. Maria Berry.
Second.
I heard. Great. Motion made and seconded. Now I'd like to open it up for any discussion or questions.
I have a couple of specific questions. James,
sure.
I agree with Sherry. Thank you for your good work on this. Notwithstanding the lack of liability, what's the sanction if the November 30 deadline is not met?
Really what would happen is that it would cease to be eligible for CARES Act funds. The state has committed, and that's what we're working into the MOU, that they are backing the acquisition financially, so that any financial consequence, if the CARES Act can for some reason not be used, that they would find other sources of funding to do this program. So really what's going to happen is they're going to advance us money from Rhode Island General Revenue and seek to reimburse themselves using the CARES Act. So the projects will proceed. It's just a function of whether the state can get reimbursed from the CARES Act.
Okay. Does the one other question? Sure. Do the public officials in the respective communities know this is going on?
You mean like political leadership or?
Yeah, the political policy leadership, the mayor of Pawtucket.
I don't believe that the mayor of Pawtucket specifically knows this. I mean, certainly not through us. I mean, some politicians may be aware that we put out this RFP, and I don't know the different relationships that the developers have within these communities. They may have had discussions, but I don't know specifically if the mayors of Pawtucket or Providence or the town of Hopkins, town manager in Hopkinton, knows about this specifically.
So that's not on our to-do list?
No. No, again, I know at least in Providence, Crossroads has already spoken to the building department and has, received some assurances based on they've already been interested in this property for quite a while, so they've done some legwork as far as whether it would be suitable for occupancy, so they're confident that they can obtain the necessary approvals very quickly. The units in Pawtucket, one of them is actually already occupied, so that building, that should have no occupancy issues, and Hopkinton, as a result of some of the physical plant issues with the property, I know that the building department has been involved down there and that they've resolved at least the building systems issues that plagued it to begin with, so I'm hopeful that would be a quick process as well.
Thank you.
This is Maria Berry.
Go ahead, Maria. No, please go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I just had a couple quick questions. I might have missed this. Are these grant dollars from the CARES Act, or do they need to be repaid in any way?
No, it'll be structured as a forgivable loan. So the intent is that the loan will be forgiven as long as it's used for the purpose intended. We spelled that out in the RFP and in the conversations we've had with developers. I don't anticipate that being an issue at all.
Okay, great. And then
it's just easier to have the structured as a loan for the purposes of compliance and have the set of documents that we've already got.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then one other question: is there any guidance on number of units that need to be, or number of people that need to be housed with this money, or is it really at the discretion of Rhode Island Housing reviewing the applications? Just the reason I ask is there's such a variability of, 4 units versus housing, mm-hmm. 30 homeless.
Sure.
So can you talk to that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, initially, the idea was if we could find units for 150 people, that would be, a great goal. And we tried to leave the RFP as broad as possible so as not to rule out any potential projects. That if somebody had a property that had 50 units or somebody had a property that had 4 units, we would look at them equally because, any unit is a positive public benefit. Part of the problem, Commissioner, is that, this necessarily had to be done in a very quick time frame. And I think that probably ruled out some potential projects because of the quick turnaround. I mean, the RFP was out for 14 days. And I think there are some developers that just couldn't put it together in a timely enough fashion. I know, unfortunately, in one case, there was a developer that had been very interested and contacted me about it. And right before they submitted their application, someone else bought up the property that they were intending to use. So I think just really, if we had 6 months to do this, I think you'd see more units come in. But just given the time crunch, these are the only 3 projects that we're able to put together applications and get them in.
Okay, thank you.
This is Commissioner Orth. I have a question about the Marathon Construction Rockville
sure.
Mill project. I realize this is a really tall order to find, vacant properties in move-in condition that are suitable mm-hmm. for homeless and get it all done in, by the way, 2 months. but I can't help but ask if this project is trying to get a square peg in a round hole. Is this, I know that Rhode Island Housing pulled a Section 8 voucher on it because of the condition of the units a while ago, and is this something we should move forward with?
So I would say, at first glance, you wouldn't think so, given the fact that it's in a very remote location in rural Rhode Island. One of the things that was very useful to us in looking at this project was, their partnership with House of Hope. House of Hope has identified 20 households in the geographical area, people who are living in their cars or living in, mobile homes that are not a permanent situation. And they've also identified that RIPTA can provide on-demand service to the property. As far as the physical condition, those issues have been remedied. The issues that precipitated Rhode Island Housing to pull the HAP contract, the actual holder of the mortgage spent some money and remedied those problems. I do see what you're saying, and I do appreciate that it's not in an urban core like Providence or Pawtucket. But I think that oftentimes is the forgotten homeless population that lives in the more rural parts of the state. And while, you don't see them on a street corner in Hopkinton, largely because there's no street corners in Hopkinton, you don't see people who are living in someone's garage or someone's basement or in their car. And to have that kind of knowledge from House of Hope, which is a very respected service provider and somebody we do a lot of work with, to have the intelligence and their understanding of what the community need is down there, it went a long way towards kind of easing those concerns for us in terms of our review.
Great. Thank you very much. That's very helpful and good to know. Any other questions or comments about this action item? All right, hearing none. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the Supportive Housing Acquisition Program Awards to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. The meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Credit Committee is now do I need to take a roll call vote on that?
Actually, I think there's a discussion item on the agenda. I'm not sure if you want to move forward with that discussion item or if you want to table that to another time.
I'd like to give it some attention. And I also don't want to delay it, though. But Nick or Maria, do you have maybe about 10 more minutes?
I do. It was just to note, it was presented to the management committee yesterday also.
Okay.
Yeah, I have some time, Kevin.
Okay.
I can stay at 10 moments.
Okay, perfect. Let's proceed then with the discussion item, which is about the single-family loan program. I asked that we have both discussion from the loan servicing side to see what the issues are there, get a lay of the land, anecdotally find out some of the common things that they're hearing from borrowers and what we are doing in response to that, and maybe think outside the box too about how we can further help our borrowers. But then also on the origination side, what are the issues being confronted by would-be borrowers, and again, what are we doing, and maybe what else could we consider doing to help those? So just like to open up the floor maybe with Leslie. Would you be giving us an overview from a loan servicing perspective?
Yes, Commissioner Orth, I am here to provide some information with regards to loan servicing. So from month end August, we experienced an increase of 106 delinquent accounts compared to July of 2020. We have a total of 1,789 delinquent accounts, of which 1,184 are in forbearance, for a total delinquency percentage of 14.18%. there are 1,059 delinquent loans that are 90 days or more past due. Of these, 825 are in forbearance. Phone call volume has decreased significantly, with just under 5,000 calls handled by loan servicing staff in August. This is a reduction of more than 50% of the number of calls received in the months immediately following the national emergency declaration. New forbearance requests continue to be low. We received an additional 114 requests in August, with the majority of borrowers indicating that the loss of the enhanced federal unemployment being the cause of their hardship. We continue to see an increase in the number of borrowers moving out of COVID forbearance. 311 borrowers have cured their delinquency through August, and an additional 292 borrowers are being reviewed for loss mitigation. This is an increase of 247 borrowers over July. FHA is paying COVID emergency partial claims within a week of submission, which is positive news for cash flow and liquidity, as these funds reimburse us for principal, interest, and escrow advances made during the forbearance period. 20 Rhode Island housing borrowers have applied for assistance under the Hardest Hit Fund program. Evictions and foreclosure moratoriums have been extended until December 31st for all government-insured and government-sponsored programs. This represents 80% of our portfolio. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
I'm curious to know, just anecdotally, what are you or what are their loan servicing agents, what are they typically hearing when a borrower calls in?
So under the CARES Act, no documentation is required with regards to hardship. So it's very different than many of the traditional loss mitigation programs. All the borrower has to indicate is that they, and they only have to do this verbally, that they were impacted by COVID. So they don't really have to provide us a default reason. They just have to say they were impacted by COVID. I would say that many of these circumstances are related to either unemployment or underemployment, maybe a loss of overtime. But many cases, and we're seeing a number of people who own 2 to 4 unit properties also impacted by a loss of rent from their tenants who have also been impacted by COVID. And obviously there is an eviction moratorium in place, so they cannot take action against the tenant. We also have borrowers who have had increases in expenses as a result of COVID. People who are working remotely have increases in their energy costs. I think at the onset of the national emergency, there were increases in food costs, as you know, there were clearly shortages of food and people were stockpiling things because obviously they were nervous about the uncertainty of the national emergency. So those are some of the types of things we're hearing. The good news is that clearly more people are returning to work, and the borrower just has to contact us and let us know that they are ready to resume their payment, and then we work with them on the post-forbearance options. So it is encouraging to see that we're receiving an increase in calls for people who are returning to work. One of the things that I will say is that the maximum period of assistance or forbearance is 12 months. So we're 6 months into this for a significant number of people who requested forbearance starting with their March payment. So the next 6 months will really tell us a lot in terms of what happens with the economy and if people at the end of the 12-month period are in a financial situation where they're able to resume their payments.
Great, thanks. So as I understand it, there's a couple of rental assistance programs out there to help renters who may be delinquent in their rent. But it's for the single family homeowner, is there simply a forbearance program, meaning they will have to pay those funds ultimately? Is there any kind of assistance program to help actually pay the mortgage due?
So the only assistance program is the hardest hit fund program, and I'm sure Peter can speak to that. But other than that, right now there really is no financial assistance. There is the forbearance program. The borrower will have to repay that money at some point in the future. The FHA program and the Fannie Mae program defer those payments that were forbeared and basically add them to the end of the loan. But the borrower has to repay them at some point in the future. Only the hardest hit program would be a grant fund program where the borrower would be given the money to make those payments or to pay arrearage. And I'm sure Peter can speak to that program.
Okay, so for the forbearance and deferring the loan payments, you're saying that, say, they have 12 months. They don't need to make up all those payments at that 12-month point. You're saying that those could be added to the end of their mortgage, essentially, so they just pick up with their normal monthly payment?
Correct. So both for Fannie Mae and FHA only, they have this deferment program. So under the FHA program, the federal government actually advances the money. That is the emergency partial claim program that I referred to. So the federal government, using the FHA insurance fund, will advance those payments up to 12 months. The homeowner signs a note in a mortgage to repay those funds back to the federal government when the borrower either sells their property, refinances, or at the end of the maturity of their mortgage. So Fannie Mae has a similar program. It's not as generous because obviously Fannie Mae doesn't have an insurance fund, but Fannie Mae will repay the servicers for the principal and interest that's been advanced. The escrow payments that have been deferred, the servicer has to provide the borrower up to a 60-month payment repayment plan for those escrows. For anything that is not government insured or government sponsored, there are loss mitigation options. So the best option for the borrower would be to take the deferred interest in the deferred escrows, add them to the principal balance, and then reamortize those payments over an extended period of time beyond the 30-year original term of the mortgage. In most instances, that's going to increase the borrower's payment when they resume. But obviously, they don't have to worry about coming up with the lump sum payments. So that's pretty much the three options that exist for the borrower.
Okay. Thank you very much. Maria or Nick, questions? No?
I asked most of my questions yesterday, but I have just one further one, Leslie. You mentioned, as an aside, there are situations where we have homeowners who have tenants in smaller buildings and the like. Is that a large cohort?
I don't have the numbers right in front of me. It's not significant. I do know those numbers because right now we're working with communications to do a mailing to our borrowers who own 2 to 4 unit properties to make them aware of forbearance if they're impacted by a tenant not paying, as well as to make them aware of the tenant assistance programs that exist so they can make their tenants aware that there may be assistance available to them. And hopefully if the tenant receives assistance, then our borrower has a positive impact of that assistance by the tenant resuming payment. We're not talking very large numbers, but we do have of our multifamily, what we call our multifamily borrowers, our 2 to 4 unit borrowers, we do have a significant number of them that have been impacted by their tenant being impacted by COVID.
Okay, thank you.
Kevin, this is Carol. I want to just mention that we have been working with the Governor's Office in Commerce on designing a state program using the CARES Act fund that would, backstop our hottest hit funds and perhaps be a little bit more flexible. So we are working with them on a program design. We understand they've sent something over to OMB, so we may be able to announce an additional program for homeowners shortly. In addition, we have, James has sent over a memo to both the Governor's Office and Commerce outlining what some other states are doing with their COVID funds around, providing assistance renters and owners
that provides flexibility around self-certification. One of the biggest challenges we have with all of these programs is the documentation requirements. So to the extent we can make the programs as flexible as possible to get the money out on the street quickly is our goal. So the conversations are ongoing, and I hope that we can roll out a couple of more flexible programs before our ability to use the funds expires.
Great, thank you. Save a couple of minutes for you, Peter, on the loan origination side. Just want to find out about origination volume and other key stats, and then what kind of the trends and challenges you're seeing with potential borrowers.
Certainly, Commissioner. Thank you for the time. While it's been a tough year, of course, we have bounced back lately in the last few months. Originations fell precipitously in the second half of March and April, but the trend is positive. We are on target to approach or exceed our goal of 1,700 first mortgages in calendar year 2020. We're currently on a run rate of 1,650. Inventory continues to be a challenge. Presently, we're at about 2.5 months of supply on the market. Certainly far from a balanced market. It's a strong seller's market. Realtors generally consider between 4 and 5 months of supply to be a stable market. Presently, we are continuing the trend of marketing aggressively through our participating lender channel. They have sold almost 94% of our mortgages, and 6% of our mortgages have gone through the loan center. As mentioned, with the high sales prices, of course, we've had an increase in loan amounts. We averaged just over $196,000 in first loans in 2017. We are now at year-to-date $243,361 average first mortgage balance at origination. That's an increase of 24% in less than 3 years. So as you can see, while mortgage rates are excellent and oftentimes can be found below 3%, the escalating home prices have created issues for our first-time home buyer. One item that we've done to combat these escalating home prices is that we've increased our down payment assistance and rolled out a new program known as the 10K DPA. This will be issued next week to the market, and it will provide $10,000 to a borrower in the form of a 0% loan. This program replaces the recently retired Spring 7500 and will be funded with MRB proceeds. Happy to take any questions.
Great. Thanks so much, Peter. Appreciate it. You touched on a couple issues, trouble with down payment, short supply of homes, and the price range of a first-time home buyers. Hard to see what we could possibly do about that. What about other areas that where we might be able to, make some inroads, like, for instance, with ease of documentation and closing of the loan, and other areas like that?
So, as I've said to my colleagues, it's a great thing that we changed and improved our online origination platform 2 years ago. I hate to imagine where we would be with the COVID challenges if we had not performed that huge technological upgrade a couple of years ago. So our loan origination system is paperless. There's still a ways to go, in my opinion, to make it more and more efficient, both to the participating lender and to ultimately to the consumer. So we're looking at ways to constantly upgrade that platform. We're looking at, for example, ways to contact our consumers through text messaging and automated emails, as opposed to the more traditional dial and write an email in a non-automated fashion. So there's certainly ways to go, and as you know, technology, and especially in the mortgage industry, continues to evolve. We have yet to see the presence of the fintechs of the world, basically technology companies who are getting into mortgages, but national publications suggest that they are coming, and we're going to have to compete with these highly automated entities such as the Amazons of the world who are branching into mortgages. We have seen Quicken and Rocket Mortgage make inroads in Rhode Island, but largely compared to the rest of the country, fintechs have not yet arrived.
Nick or Maria, any questions?
I'm all set.
Yeah, I'm too.
Okay, great. I can ask one final one if I can. And Peter, that refinance, you had mentioned in the past that it was potential for some borrowers to refinance, but I believe that you said that their primary roadblock was maybe the valuation. Could you just speak briefly to that? And maybe there's some way to overcome obstacles to make that a vehicle for some.
Absolutely. So valuations have certainly improved, and we are seeing more borrowers eligible to refinance. We are actually going to launch two additional refinance programs in the FHA space next week. A cash-out refinance, which will enable the borrower to consolidate debt, and a traditional rate and term refinance, which will allow the borrower to refinance prepaids and closing costs. So we feel that we'll be pretty well equipped with the FHA market to provide refinancing, but we also want to expand our ability to offer refinancing to borrowers in the conventional world. So right now we offer a program that's for borrowers that are below 80% of Fannie Mae's 80 AMI. We will be changing our system to allow over 80% AMI borrowers. And we think with that addition, we'll have a good platform to be fairly comprehensive in the refi space, which is incredibly competitive, as you can imagine. We offer a lot of value with our down payment assistance and our home buyer education. But once the borrower owns a home and acquires equity through appreciation and debt amortization, they have many more outlets to consider, even national lenders such as Quicken. So Rhode Island Housing will be better equipped to deal with that competitive market.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that discussion. And if there's no other comments or questions, I'd like to ask for a motion to adjourn today's meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Great. And it seems such a formality, but Nicole, roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of adjourning this meeting, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Resines?
Aye.
Commissioner Barry?
Aye.
Vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Credit Committee is now adjourned. Thank you all very much for your time and participation.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Yep. Bye. Bye-bye.